This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me, of course, is Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere NFL Tags. How was your Sunday?
It was all right. I mean, you know, when we have season-ending injuries, it's always like a somber mood where, yeah. Especially when it's Joe Burrow, you know, I would say the hopeful face of the NFL for the next, you know, 15 years. Yeah. But it seems like he suffered a season-ending injury. So it's a bit somber today.
It does sound like an ACL. And you could probably have told that his season was over the second that it happened, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a real bummer. It's a bummer when anybody gets injured, certainly when a young up-and-coming star gets injured, and it's going to have some fantasy ramifications that we're going to talk about when we get to that game, but we'll get into every game. But before we do, let me remind you about our November giveaway. We have a little over a week left here going on. It's a signed Alvin Kamara helmet. You can enter our contest in one of three ways. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Bros. You can follow us on Instagram at Fantasy Bros. Or you can subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Fantasy Bros. Any one of those is an entry. All three of those is an entry. All you got to do is do any one of those and then go to fantasybros.com/contest to enter. Again, that's fantasybros.com/contest. All right, Taggy Tags, trust or bust. Let's get into it. Let's start with Mr. J.K. Dobbins. Dominated the snaps today. Mm-hmm. Dominated the touches. 15 carries, 70 yards, and the score. 2 catches for 15 yards. Gus Edwards and Mark Ingram combined for 5 touches. J.K. Dobbins. Trust or bust?
Oh, he's an easy trust. Easy trust. I mean, we were waiting for this to happen. This is honestly, no running back in this backfield has been someone that you could trust on a weekly basis. Like none of them, even when Mark Ingram was healthy at the beginning of the year, he wasn't getting more than like 10 touches in a single game. So to see J.K. Dobbins go out there and get 17 opportunities in a game that was, it was pretty neutral throughout. It's not game script dependent. We know that he's the, I don't want to say the prized pass catching back because there really is no such thing in the Ravens offense. But yeah, Dobbins, he's the guy, man, and he played well, so there's zero reason that's going to go away. He's a top, I'll say top 18 running back for the rest of the season.
So this is sort of one of the reasons that you hold. I'm surprised by this. I really, really am, because I thought it would take an injury to one of these other guys for this to happen. And Tags, I'm looking at our rest of season rankings as we come in, as I always do. You had him 38th. I had him 36th. This is just the coaching staff realizing what they're, I mean, they lost today, unfortunately, but this is the coaching staff realizing who the best back is and wanting to get him out there. And I'm in complete agreement with you. This is a trust, and this is what we're going to see going forward. And it's great because Dobbins is, as long as he's going to get the big workload, he is somebody for sure that you can trust. Let's go to another J initial person, and that's J.D. McKissic. Usually this is more of a big performance trust or bust type of thing, right? You're like, wow, look at this. That's not what we got today from McKissic. This is really more about like, I don't know. I don't know about you, Tags. I got so many questions this morning. J.D. McKissic versus established running back. Should I start or sit early this morning when we did our start sits? Yep. So J.D. McKissic today, not crazy. 6 carries, but 43 yards on the ground. Only 4 targets after seeing 29 the previous 2 games. 3 catches for 26 yards. So is J.D. McKissic a trust or a bust?
He's someone you want to keep. I mean, I kind of trust that this is the performance you're like. I didn't like him as much this week. I really didn't. I didn't feel like there was going to be a whole lot of pressure with the Bengals front 7. So I felt like Alex Smith wasn't going to check down nearly as much. And then we got a positive game script. So ultimately, it resulted in a bad performance by McKissic. It wasn't horrendous in PPR formats. He was fine. But I say hold on to him. I was looking at the rest of the season schedule for this team moving forward. And if you go look like week 13 through week 15, he should be played in those weeks because those are going to be negative game scripts against the Steelers, against the 49ers, and against the Seahawks. So I would anticipate them falling behind in those games, and that's where McKissic has the most value on that team because they just don't trust Antonio Gibson to play more than 35 snaps per game. So I'd say hold on to McKissic for now.
So you had McKissic 39th coming in. Is that about where he's going to stay in your half PPR rankings?
Yeah, I actually moved him up just a little bit because, again, I started taking a look at the rest of the season's schedule, and I feel like he's someone that probably should have moved up. The upside is limited. He's not going to win you a championship or anything like that, but I think that he's worth the RB35 in my rankings right now.
Okay, let's get to what's your problem, man. Just one entry today, and it's Curtis Samuel. 10 targets, 8 catches, 70 yards on the touchdown. You had him 50th, tags. 50th. That is wide receiver 5. I mean, I know he's coming off a terrible game against the Bucks. Consistent targets, he's finding the end zone regularly. What is your problem with Curtis Samuel, man?
I mean, he still has his bye week coming up. That has to be factored in because it's a week where you're not going to be able to use him. It's also looking at everybody in the rankings and talking about like the players that you're going to pass on him for, because like the guys I have directly in front of him are guys like John Brown, Christian Kirk, Debo Samuel, who's coming back, Corey Davis, who's been a bit underrated. Travis Fulcombe's going to drop a bit. But yeah, I mean, Samuel, I might be a little low on him, but I mean, wide receiver, I actually was above consensus on him this week. I think I had him at like wide receiver 39. So I liked him this week. I think he's more of like an extension of that run game where it's like, if you find teams that struggle against the run, they almost use him in that fashion. So you kind of want to find those matchups. Tough schedule. I don't know.
This does not sound like you're moving him up or you are agreeing that you have a problem.
Wide receiver 45 is probably right. I just don't think it's much higher than that.
Okay. So you would prefer, just to be clear, because I'm looking at mine. You would prefer, let's say, Curtis Samuel or Sterling Shepard rest of season.
Shepard.
Curtis Samuel or Jarvis Landry rest of season.
Landry's going to move down. I haven't figured out how far I'm moving him down. I'll go to Curtis Samuel there. I just don't see the upside of Landry at this point.
No, we'll get to, you know, on Mondays, we like to play drop or keep. Landry will be on there, but I may ask you about it today, but let's get into the games here. Let's start with the Titans Ravens game. Great one that goes to overtime. Titans 30, Ravens 24. I feel bad for anyone who has to tackle Derrick Henry in the fourth quarter of any game or overtime. Of course, this is pretty much good for everyone here. I mean, Henry has 28 carries for 133 yards and the game-winning touchdown. You knew the matchup wasn't quite as bad as it otherwise would have been against the Ravens here with their injuries. AJ Brown, we were joking on Slack tags about how he had the yips a little bit early on and was dropping, and then he just shoved it in our face with that absolutely preposterous touchdown catch and run. 7 targets, 4 catches, 62 yards. And the touchdown. Corey Davis, meanwhile, you mentioned briefly, 113 yards. And Ryan Tannehill, 259 yards, 2 touchdowns with the pick, but he runs for 35 yards. I mean, I don't know here, Tags. We know that Henry and Brown are studs. Davis has another great game. Tannehill survives a tough matchup. What's your biggest takeaway in this game?
It's really tough because I watched a lot of this game. It was one of the games I chose to put on the screens. And so the Ravens essentially sold out to stop the run. They basically said, we're going to force Tannehill to beat us. And that's basically what they had to do. I mean, until Derrick Henry got later in the game and he just wore them down. They were without their 2 top interior defensive linemen in this game. So it was always going to be tough for the Ravens to slow down Derrick Henry, but it's good for Tannehill. I don't want to like jump up and down just because, again, I know the game plan. They were down some talent in the secondary as well. But Tannehill has struggled without Taylor Lewan in the lineup. And I just don't know if I want to say I'm all in on Tannehill again. I think he's a fine streamer because he does offer some mobility. But the biggest takeaway, A.J. Brown did have I think it was 3 drops in the first
early on. Yeah, it was just weird.
Yeah, it was just
especially after the last game where he had the dropsies too.
Yep. And he dropped that long touchdown that could have changed everything. Fortunately, he made up for it by racking up yards after the catch. But Corey Davis, I mean, Jesus, the only bad game he's had this year was against the Bears. And the Bears have really slowed down a lot of good wide receivers. So, I mean, Corey Davis is it's weird to say he's like an every week wide receiver three right now.
That's what I wanted to talk about. To me, that was the biggest takeaway, because, again, I know that you know, that one game where he sort of disappeared scared everybody. But realistically, if he's there almost every time, he produces. And we talk about it all the time about this just slop that we're throwing out there, pardon my expression, but that we throw out there, borderline wide receiver threes. We don't feel confident in any of them. Corey Davis is sort of a guy you can be like, okay, I feel pretty confident that what I'm going to get from this guy, and it's decent production. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I'm going to be moving him up. You had him higher already than I did coming into this week. You had him at 42. I had him all the way down at 47, but I agree with you. I think this is moving into borderline wide receiver three territory. Meanwhile, for the Ravens, we talked about the running game already. Mark Andrews, 7 targets, 5 catches, 96 yards, and the touchdown, but everything else is really bad. I mean, this is what I feel like, this is Lamar Jackson's line every single game. 186 yards and the touchdown with an interception. He adds in the 51 rushing yards to save his day. Hollywood Brown completely shut out, 3 targets, no catches. I don't know, Tags, what a non-running game, what do you do with this offense here? I mean, can you drop Hollywood Brown finally?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, because again, I think we talked about it on the last week on the show, I think. And I said, it's gotten to the point where he hurts you more often than not. And like, yeah, you could put him in your lineup and you might get a big performance here or there. And we haven't even gotten to here or there. But he just hurts you far too much more than he helps you. Lamar Jackson took a slight step back in terms of his passing. Marquise Brown did drop a ball that went right through his hands today. Dez Bryant was oddly involved more than Marquise Brown. So clearly the Ravens are not happy with Marquise Brown's performance today. This point, and going back to Lamar Jackson, I mean, his top 4 finishes this year, none of them are in the top 3 quarterbacks. So I think we have to dial back expectations, even if he does have like literally the best playoff schedule that you could ask for. He can potentially win fantasy leagues. He's still offering a floor, though. I mean, we don't want to pass that up.
I'd already dropped him to 8th, man, in my rest of zero rankings coming into this week. You would still have him at 4th. Is he moving down, or are you holding strong because of the playoff schedule?
No, he moved down a little bit. I am keeping up. I have him at 6 the rest of the season. I'm keeping him there because, again, it's all about the rest of the season schedule right now. And they're just so good that I think his floor is worth being in the top 6 fantasy quarterbacks for the
Raiders. Jackson or Justin Herbert?
Herbert's the guy I moved over him. Yeah. But, I mean, I was a little hesitant to do that. But, yeah, it feels Herbert's just doing it every single week, man.
There should be no hesitation. You should feel confident in that. I agree with that. Yeah, I think that's right. I think Herbert, you know, for me, he was 7. He might go up to 6, but he's there. For me, it's really about Lamar Jackson, just a guy who could be your playoff savior, but I'm not all that confident in it. Let's get to the really, really game of the week, Panthers 20, Lions 0. Look, the Panthers had the weird Teddy Bridgewater's active. Yeah. Whoops, sorry. Sorry about that. Oops. He's actually inactive. Winds up being PJ Walker, who is whatever, 24 of 34. 258 yards and a touchdown, but 2 picks, bad picks. Mike Davis does come through, 79 total yards on the score. And the receivers, we talked about Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, 11 targets, 7 catches, 127 yards. Robbie Anderson, this is kind of a Robbie Anderson line right now here, Tags, 9 targets, 7 catches, 46 yards. So Bridgewater is probably going to be, considering he was almost active in this game, you kind of assume that he'll be back next week against Minnesota, although, of course, they do have the weird week 13 bye, but do we take anything from this, given that it was PJ Walker? And if so, what do we take from this?
We can't take anything away from it if it's PJ Walker, because he obviously had different, I don't want to say priority with his targets, because we've seen DJ Moore targeted double digit times with Bridgewater under center. It's just very rare to see it. Robbie Anderson, has he scored a touchdown since week 1?
No, he has 1 touchdown, I believe, on the season.
Yeah, and it was week 1 on that broken play. Basically, he was all by himself. Like, it was just the cornerback, I think, fell down, if I wasn't mistaken. His yardage, he's kind of fallen back into, like, that, you know, low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3, because his yardage has carried him. Like, I think coming into this week, he was the wide receiver 12. Now, he hadn't had his bye week yet, so that's obviously going to drop him into wide receiver 2 territory, but I mean, he is getting the targets. It's difficult to pass on that. Moore's targets are a bit shakier. I don't know, man. It's really it's so difficult to gauge what this team's going to do, because they're not playing for the playoffs right now. They clearly chose to rest Christian McCaffrey when it seemed like maybe he could have played. So they might do the same thing with Teddy Bridgewater. So
I think really Robbie Anderson tags had the other what's your problem man not been Curtis Samuel, I didn't want to double up on the Carolina wide receivers. Mm-hmm. But this was a really big one for us in our rest of season rankings. Different. I'm off the Robbie Anderson train for a bit. I mean, this is what we're getting basically nonstop. And the targets are great, but the production's not there. Certainly the touchdowns aren't there. I already had moved him down tags to 30th in my rest of season rankings, because I know you had him 15th. So, but he was up there for me forever. But eventually tags, I don't know, man, they've still, you mentioned it, still having your bye week at this point is horrific, because everybody else has passed that. That's a whole week that you're without them. It's like going with a player who you know is going to be injured for a week going forward. Like, that would significantly damper how you feel about them rest of the season. So for me, I'm already off. I want you to reevaluate. We're going to talk about it next week and see where you're
at. I did move him down to wide receiver 20 for what it's worth.
I'll take that. Lions, no Kenny Galladay, no DeAndre Swift. It's just
no Danny Amendola.
No Danny Amendola. It's really ugly. Adrian Peterson and Kerryon Johnson combined for 13 carries for 35 yards. TJ Hockenson does produce 4 for 68, which is like awesome white tight end numbers. Marvin Jones, 4 catches, 51 yards. Stafford, just 178 yards. I mean, you start DeAndre Swift, of course, when he plays. You start Kenny Galladay when he plays. You start TJ Hockenson pretty much every time out there, and you bench everybody else. Is that basically it?
Kind of. Stafford has even been hard to predict. Like, the games that he's been good in are against opponents that you wouldn't expect him to be good against. So it's like, I don't even know what to expect. So they're going against Houston on Thanksgiving Day, and I don't even know what to expect out of Matthew Stafford. I mean, Galladay, he had a limited practice on Wednesday, and then he was downgraded to DNP on Thursday and Friday, which tells me it's either he had a setback or I think the only answer, I think, is a setback. So I don't even know if he's guaranteed to play.
It could have been something where, because of the Thanksgiving game, they wanted to be careful with him. Maybe, if I want to be, you know, looking optimistically. But yeah, it's no good. Either way, avoid.
Yeah, entirely. The biggest takeaway from this game for me is the fact that Adrian Peterson was a big letdown. I said on the live stream this morning that I felt like it could be, like, I think Adrian Peterson's like a veteran, like he's old enough to know that this was probably going to be his last time that he had a chance to like get a big workload in a game for his career. And I don't know. Maybe that's just like the human element in me, is I thought that would like almost just say, all right, this is my time to do it. Like, and again, it's against the Panthers, like one of the worst run defenses in the league. So to see him struggle, that was the biggest disappointment in this game.
It's not like Kerryon Johnson was any better, though. They just couldn't do anything, man. They were just terrible. Whatever. Yeah. Throw it all out. Start DeAndre Swift when he's back and move on. Steelers 27, Jaguars 3, in a game where the Steelers had the game in hand from basically the second minute of the game. Ben Roethlisberger attempts 46 passes. It's nuts how much they throw, and I love it. 267 yards, 2 touchdowns. One goes to Chase Claypool, who has 4 for 59. One goes to Eric Ebron. Nice to see him involved again, 4 for 36 with the score. Deontay Johnson doesn't find the end zone. You have to deal with just the 16 targets, the 12 catches, 111 yards. I think the only part of the passing game that didn't work was Juju Smith-Schuster. Just 5 targets, 4 catches for 19 yards. I think he left very late with, like, he stepped on the flag or something, and it looked like he hurt his foot, but that was pretty late. Tags, this is just how I view the passing game. I don't know about you. Probably not all of them are going to go off every single game. They're just, it's almost impossible, even with how much they pass, but two of them almost certainly will. So I'm just going to rank them all as basically solid wide receiver twos and realize that probably one of them is going to be wrong. Do you do this differently or what?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you kind of have to try and pick your matchups, but this week I had them ranked as, I think, the 11th, 12th, and 13th wide receivers. Yeah. So it's really difficult to discern them, but Juju did go off to the sideline twice in this game. So it was 2 times he had to leave the game, and Juju has not played well through injuries this year. If you go back to the beginning of the year, he was on the injury report quite a bit. So it's something to definitely watch as the week goes on. Again, they're another team that plays on Thanksgiving night against the Ravens. So that's a difficult matchup against Marlon Humphrey. So maybe you would almost prefer him not to play that game. And that's a conversation that needs to be had too, Dan, because the last time they played against these Ravens, they didn't have two of those wide receivers go off. So it's a difficult matchup on Thanksgiving, but I just don't see how you bench these guys right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I kind of like, I don't like it when anybody asks me which wide receiver would I play, because legitimately back to back to back is almost always how I have it, because you really can't. I mean, you do your best to sort of pick the matchup, but that is what it is. Meanwhile, this is probably the most frustrating, really good game that I've ever seen from James Conner. I mean, he looked great in this one against, you know, the Jaguars had been a little better against the run than they had the past. 13 for 89 on the ground, 3 catches for 10 yards. Of course, Benny Snell steals the touchdown. And even when they're way ahead, Tags, they're way ahead. The game is over. They don't lean into the running game. They just don't. They just keep throwing nonstop. Is Connor an RB1 that you can rely on going forward?
No, he's not an RB1. So he totaled at least 18 touches in each of his first six full games that he played this year. All right. But after that, it's been not, he's had 42 touches over the last three games. And that's despite them outscoring their opponents 87 to 32.
Right.
Even worse, he has scored one touchdown over the last 5 weeks. Benny Snell has two during that time. I don't like it. No, he's an RB2, unfortunately, and not a sexy one.
Ugh, it's so frustrating. When they brought in Snell for that, man, I was like, you got to be kidding me with this kid, because he looked good and he was running well. Give him the touchdown. Whatever. I agree with you, though. I do agree with you. I had him 13th coming in. I mean, there are not that many guys you can take over him realistically, just because the running back position gets pretty ugly once you get past 15. But still, I agree with you. He's outside that conversation. For the Jags, James Robinson, very solid again, 17 for 73 on the ground, 2 for 21 through the air. People are a little worried about his playoff schedule tags. I don't know if you've been getting those questions too, right, with Baltimore and Chicago. But he's pretty much just matchup proof. You just throw him out there no matter what, right?
You kind of have to. And I went through that and tried to highlight why in the primer this week, because I went through and I said the Steelers only allow this much yardage, only about this many touches to running backs. But when you look at the Jaguars and you say, okay, even if James Robinson finishes with those totals and he gets 92% of the touches or whatever that he's getting in this backfield, you're okay with it. Yeah. He may not finish as an RB1, but you cannot bench a guy that's getting 18 plus touches every single week. And there's, I mean, Ozigbo is actually active and gets three receptions in this game, which is a little weird.
Just at the very end, I think they were all on the last drive.
Were they?
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was right. Because I was watching that game, not that carefully, but I enjoy watching the Steelers, as does Will. So we always have it on one of the TVs to make sure. But I think Ozigbo really got involved only at the end. I think it was all James Robinson, pretty much, unless I'm mistaken. Meanwhile, I'm not sure whether or not Jake Luton is going to be the starter going forward. If Gardner Minshew's, you knew this was going to be bad for him. He's not good under pressure, and there was going to be a lot of pressure. Your leading receiver is DJ Chark. 8 targets, 4 catches, 41 yards. Is he an every week starter for you going forward, Tex?
I think it depends on the quarterback, who it is. If it's Luton under center, I don't think you necessarily have to start him every single week, but he's in the wide receiver 3 conversation of guys that it's kind of matchup dependent. Because we can't even pretend that he was the most consistent wide receiver, even with Minshew under center.
That's true. Now that, I mean, they do get, you know, Cleveland, Minnesota. It's not, you know, they'll find a way to produce, I think. But yeah, he got 8 targets at least, which is good. I did think that he would find his way. I didn't rank him crazy high, but I did kind of think that there would just be some, you know, Steelers, wide receivers generally produce against the Steelers anyway. I thought there'd be at least one kind of play, but yeah, disappointing here. Let's get to the Texans 27, Patriots 20, 27 points for the Texans tags, but really the only person with a really big fantasy game is Deshaun Watson, 344 and 2 through the air. He rushes for 36 yards in the score. The wide receiver is perfectly respectable. Brandon Cooks, 4 catches for 85 yards. Jordan Akins, 5 catches for 83 yards. And Will Fuller, 6 for 80 yards. That's all well and good tags. I don't really think we need to talk too much about them. We can, but I do want to talk about Duke Johnson here, because we know he's got at least one more start. I haven't heard anything on David Johnson at all, so I have no idea whether or not he's going to come back after he's off IR. Just 10 carries for 15 yards on the ground. He does add 3 catches and 20 yards through the air. Thanksgiving, you mentioned it, against the Lions. Are you going to recommend him as a starter in that matchup?
I think we have to, right? I mean, it sucks because I think we're starting to see why Duke Johnson was never the starter or got a lot of carries when he was in Cleveland or even with Houston, because everybody kept clamoring, Duke Johnson, give him more carries, give him more touches, give him more touches. And then when I started to see like multiple coaching staffs do the same exact thing with him, I'm like, all right, they probably just know the player that he is. And we're starting to see that, right? Right. It's unfortunate that they don't utilize his best asset. And I said the same thing when they traded for David Johnson. I was like, I don't even understand this trade, because the Texans don't target their running backs in the passing game. And it's the same thing with Duke Johnson. So I think you have to recommend him against Detroit, though. It's just too good of a matchup not to. But clearly you have to dial back expectations into let's call it middling to low-end RB2 conversation, but he's someone that should be started.
Yeah, he's still going to be a starter, but man, I just, you know, make use of him in the passing game. Come on. Sure. Now, again, you talked about that. That's just not what they do, which stinks. But this was a really disappointing game for him. For the Pats, I mean, Cam Newton throwing 40 times for 365 yards and a touchdown, it's probably not what you really want when you're thinking about what you want out of the Patriots offense. Even with that, though, Jacoby Myers, only 3 targets. He catches all of them for 38 yards. It's Demir Byrd here, 7 targets, 6 catches, 132 yards and a touchdown. Was this just a tough matchup here for Myers Tags? How do you view him going forward?
I mean, I was always exercising caution on him. And for those who had trade deadlines, I recommended him as a sell. Because if we go back to, again, we go back to Julian Edelman, when he was playing with Cam Newton for the first couple weeks of the season, it was like, oh, you know, he had a career high in yards. I think it was in week two. And then all of a sudden it's like, he's a drop candidate. So I like Myers was a fine play based on the opportunity and the target share that he'd been getting, because he had over a 40% target share over the last 3 weeks. That's massive. And you can't, that's like almost like someone you have to play. And then you see the struggles of Cam Newton as a passer, and you're kind of like, I don't know how to feel about him. But when Cam Newton throws for 365 yards and he finishes with 38 of them, that's a little concerning, because it means that even if Cam Newton's on as a passer, you can't necessarily trust him. It's just too inconsistent of an offense for me to trust week in and week out. So you kind of just want to play the matchups.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Damien Harris scores the early touchdown here, Tags, with just 11 carries for 43 yards on the ground. Rex Burkhead suffers a knee injury. Sounds like it's probably an ACL, so my guess is he's going to be out for the season. Sonny Michel should be active next week. There was thought he could be active this week. So what are your thoughts here on Damien Harris going forward?
I like him. And the reason I think Sony, I don't know what role Sony Michel has. I don't even know if he's going to be active moving forward. I think that they might keep him off the active roster on game day, just because Damien Harris plays that role and he's been playing it extremely well. I don't know if Damien Harris is more injured than they're letting on, and that's why he only got 11 carries in this game, because you're supposed to run the ball against Houston. This is a team that allowed over 200 more rushing yards than any other team in the league coming into this game. There was zero reason they shouldn't have run the ball more. So to see Cam Newton drop back and throw the ball 40 times, I just think it's poor game planning on the Patriots' part. And I don't know. It's, again, it goes back to the idea that the Patriots are just wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, so do you have interest then here at all in James White, who finally kind of gets involved, 6 catches on 9 targets for 64 yards, adds 19 on the ground, or is this just kind of stay away?
Oh, no, I absolutely do, because basically the reason that his role was dwindling was because Rex Burkhead was getting that role. So if Rex Burkhead's going to miss time, Sony Michel can't step into that role. Damien Harris can't step into that role. It's James White's role. So if Burkhead is out for the season, James White goes back into that like flex conversation every single week.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I have no specifics on the Burkhead injury. I just did hear some speculation that people thought it was torn ACL. So if he is out, make sure you look for James White, who's probably widely available since he really hasn't done much all season. Browns 22, Eagles 17. It was Cleveland, so you know it was going to be kind of ugly weather. Nick Chubb 20 for 114 on the ground. Kareem Hunt, your process was right here, Tags. We talked about this on the Start Sit Show. You were like, why is everybody ranking him as if he's a surefire locked-in starter? He only has 21 yards. He does get the late touchdown here. But both these guys are locked into your lineup going forward. I know you didn't like the Kareem Hunt matchup necessarily, but let's talk about the passing game here if we can. And you can tell me if you want to talk about the running game, but look, Hodge is your leading receiver, 3 for 73. Rashard Higgins, okay, 3 for 65. Jarvis Landry, as we mentioned, just 2 for 23. Austin Hooper, just 3 for 33. You are starting the running backs pretty much each and every time out, and I know it was bad weather, but are you starting any pass catcher for the Browns going forward?
No, I don't think you have to. No.
No, that's the correct answer. Should you roster Jarvis Landry at all?
I don't think you need to, because it's now at the point where at what point can you look at your starting lineup and say, I need to have Jarvis Landry in there? I mean, there's been some good matchups this year that he hasn't done well in. And probably some of it probably comes back to health, but the other part comes back to that Baker Mayfield just hasn't been good. This offense doesn't want to throw the ball. Win conditions are not, they don't want to throw the ball 30 times per game, and that's problematic for wide receivers.
Yep, I agree with you there. Philadelphia, Carson Wentz, Tags, is just playing so poorly right now. Just his decision-making is just so abysmal. You keep waiting for it. I get that their offensive line is poor, but every decision that he makes, it just horrible. He winds up with an okay fantasy day, 235 and 2 touchdowns. He has the 2 picks. The 2 touchdowns go to the tight ends, Dallas Goedert, who finishes with 5 catches for 77 yards. Richard Rodgers, 2 catches for 48 yards. Jalen Reagor, 4 for 52. Travis Fulgham, 7 targets, okay, 1 catch, 8 yards. I mean, the offense is gross, Tags. I guess really for me, it's Fulgham. Are you willing to drop him at this point?
I think so, because I don't want to be forced to start him. I mean, he's had the targets over the last 2 weeks. He's had 12 targets. He's caught 2 of them for, what, 13 yards?
Yep.
That sucks. I mean, we knew that, you know, going into this game, we kind of knew that we had to deal with Carson Wentz's crappy play here and there. And to be fair, this game, it was raining throughout the entire game and it was a sloppy field. It was a mess. But it's everything else combining with that, like leading up to this, that Carson Wentz has just been bad. His decision making's bad. And he, he just doesn't look like the same player. I don't even know how to explain it. I do think that if you're in like a dynasty format, people are like ready to drop Carson Wentz. I might go out there if you plan dynasty again, dynasty only, I might go and see what it would take to acquire Carson Wentz, because this is not the quarterback that he's been for his career. There's just something wrong here. The offensive line could be it, basically, because he's always sat behind an offensive line that was top five in the NFL. This offensive line is not that.
No, I guess that's what I'm willing to say, because I like Wentz as a player. He's very talented, but he looks lost right now this season. With regard to Fulgham, I agree with you. And I was glad enough to sort of analyze it, because I really like Fulgham, and I've very much been on the take the name off the jersey, and you'd probably think very differently about him. But I kind of looked into it, and I just wasn't having it, especially with the weather. I moved him way down coming into this week, which, you know, I agree. I think he can move on. Saints 24, Falcons 9. All right, Taysom Hill. I got you. 18 for 23 and 233 yards through the air, but it's the 10 carries and 51 yards and two scores on the ground. Meanwhile, Michael Thomas, 12 targets, 9 catches, 104 yards. Is Michael Thomas unleashed with Taysom Hill, or was this just benefiting from a really easy matchup?
No, this looks like Michael Thomas was playing like Michael Thomas. He had one bad drop in this game that he should have had. It would have been like a 20-plus yard reception. It could have went for a lot more, too. He had some room to run. But yeah, they designed plays to get him the ball, and Taysom Hill continually looked his way. It's the opposite of what Drew Brees did actually last week, because if you were watching the game last week, and it sucked because I was high on Michael Thomas, where it was like I kept watching and I'm like, Brees's eyes, he like never wanted to turn towards Michael Thomas. And then Jameis Winston came in the game, targeted him a few times, even though it was off target. I loved what was happening with Michael Thomas in this game with Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill had eyes for only him. It was kind of like Justin Herbert and Keenan Allen, the connection there. So I'm trusting him moving forward with Taysom Hill.
Yeah, crazy. I forgot what you said, Tags. It's a great line about that. All it took was Taysom Hill
to unlock Michael Thomas. Yeah,
to unlock Michael Thomas, which is absolutely true. Do you have any concerns about Alvin Kamara? I mean, he finds the end zone, but just 13 for 45 plus no catches and only one target. That's the big thing here. Are you worried at all about, I mean, you're going to always start Alvin Kamara, of course, but are you worried at all about what it's going to look like here without the targets to Alvin Kamara going forward?
I am. Yes, 100%. Now, this game, I talked to everyone about this game, and I said that on the ground was always going to be difficult for Kamara to produce a lot of fantasy numbers. So to see him with 45 yards and a touchdown on the ground, not surprising at all. The Falcons coming into this game had allowed the fewest fantasy points on the ground to running backs. Crazy. I know. But through the air, they had been beaten. A lot of running backs rack up the receptions against them. Alvin Kamara, every single time they play the Falcons, he's racking up the receptions. So this is definitely a concern for Alvin Kamara, because Latavius Murray has been getting, as many carries, but it's been like a 55-45 split on the ground, whereas Kamara makes up so much of his volume through the air. So his weighted opportunity went way down this weekend. To know the team's not going to throw as much with Taysom Hill under center, yeah, it's definitely concerning for him.
Would you prefer Derrick Henry or Alvin Kamara going forward in half PPR?
That's something I was actually going to ask you, because Derrick Henry's schedule, and like if you're making the fantasy playoffs, get Derrick Henry like right now. Not only does he crush down the stretch, but you look at his matchups in week 14, 15, 16, Jacksonville, Detroit, and Green Bay.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that. Derrick Henry crushes in those months, those matchups. Those could be like three straight 200-yard games.
Yeah, it's going to be ridiculous. Yeah, if you're making me choose one or the other right now, I think I choose Derrick Henry over Alvin Kamara. For the Falcons, meanwhile, Julio Jones, only two targets, catches both of them for 39 yards. But he was really in and out of the lineup all game.
He was barely out most of the game.
He was. I know. He basically came back, caught the pass, and then left again. Only, you know, hamstring tightness. So, I mean, I don't know. We obviously need to monitor that. Calvin Ridley returns 9 targets, 5 catches, 90 yards. Russell Gage, extra work without Julio Jones, 12 targets, 7 catches for 58 yards. Obviously disappointing for Jones, especially when we heard Lattimore was out coming into the game. But any takeaways from the passing game here, Tags? I mean, what can you do here with Jones?
I mean, Matt Ryan looked terrible. He did. He was double clutching all game long. He had happy feet. Like, he just looked uncomfortable the entire game. And honestly, I attribute some of this to the Saints, though, because he was going through his reads. He was doing what he was supposed to. But the Saints defense over the last few weeks, they've looked a lot better. I mean, you go back to that game against Tom Brady when they held him to, you know, no touchdowns, 3 interceptions that game. The next week was against Nick Mullins. They played well against him. Like, over the last 3 weeks, The Saints have allowed 3 points, 13 points, and 9 points. And two of those games were against the Falcons and the Bucks, two of the higher powered offenses in the league. So maybe the Saints defense has finally turned around and is playing like the defense that everybody thought they would coming into this year. Because again, my preseason picks for the Super Bowl were the Saints and the Chiefs, because I thought the Saints were the most complete team in the NFL. Defense, run game, pass game, all of it, you know? So it's possible that it was just the matchup here. But again, if you go back to earlier in the season when Julio Jones was out of the lineup, Matt Ryan looked like a different quarterback. So if Julio misses time, we have to downgrade Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and they have Vegas next, so it's not exactly the toughest matchup for either part of the game, but it's certainly you want to see Julio in there if you're going to be trusting Matt Ryan. Meanwhile, again, Todd Gurley, we basically said, here it comes. Now they've got Vegas next weekend, but after that, it's the Saints, the Chargers, the Bucks, only 8-26 here. I mean, there's not much you can do with Todd Gurley at this point. You're still going to rank him as an RB2 going forward, right?
Yeah, but it's gross. I mean, it's gross. Someone asked me earlier this week about Gurley, and they said, how do you keep having him in the sell column? All the guy does is score touchdowns. I'm like, because this is why. It's performances like this that will crush your fantasy team in the fantasy playoffs, and you cannot have that. And again, he's going to have to play the Saints again. He's going to have to play the Bucks. Those are two matchups that are just brutal. And again, if Julio's out, there's going to be less scoring opportunities for this offense as a whole. I just hate that Gurley's not involved in the passing game at all. So, I mean, if I asked you, Dan, who would you rather have for the rest of the season, like put on the spot, Todd Gurley or J.K. Dobbins?
Oh, goodness. Dobbins, if you're putting me on the spot, this is something where I've got to look into, but I think Dobbins, because I do think at this point that if you are legitimately dependent on the touchdown for Gurley, and whenever we talk about somebody who's like, well, he's just a touchdown dependent option, you don't want that guy in your lineup. And Dobbins has the chance to be somebody who you're like, oh yes, if you're really going to take control of this backfield, I would much prefer you. So yeah, even though I don't exactly know that this is what it's going to be like for Baltimore going forward, I hope, yeah, I think I'll take Dobbins. Crazy that this would have happened. It's one of the reasons why we always talk about Jonathan Taylor, and while I'm never like, oh, I don't really want to drop Jonathan Taylor just in case something like that happens, you know? Washington 20, Cincinnati 9. The big issue here is Joe Burrow. Of course, as we mentioned early, he is done for the year with the torn ACL. Ryan Finley just 3-10 for 30 yards. So look, Tyler Boyd here, 9 catches for 85 yards. AJ Green catches his first touchdown in 2 years or whatever, 41 yards on the score. T. Higgins does see 10 targets, only 3 catches for 26 yards. But let's talk about how these guys, I mean, forget about Green, who probably wasn't that high to begin
with.
Wait,
don't move on from Green just yet. Did you see my tweet this morning?
No.
All right. So I put out a tweet this morning and everybody thought it was pretty funny. I said, I put my Spotify on shuffle this morning. The lyrics that played in the first song were, "These broken bottles where I lay are just a constant reminder of you." Translation: play AJ Green. And what do you know? AJ Green catches his first touchdown of the season. I thought it was pretty comical. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Such a failure by me as a host to not have caught that in the morning. Stupid Instagram live. Okay. So putting that aside, how far are the wide receivers here for Cincinnati going to fall now without Joe Burrow and with Ryan Finley?
Yeah, I've already adjusted and it's not good. Tyler Boyd falls to the wide receiver 30. T. Higgins falls to wide receiver 32. And AJ Green is basically dead.
And so just for perspective, where were they before that?
Oh, they were both top 20 receivers, those guys.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I agree completely. I mean, I don't know what you're supposed to do at this point other than just completely drop them off the map, because it's just going to be a different offense and it stinks. Yeah. And if you're headed to the fantasy playoffs, be on the lookout for other wide receivers that you can possibly get. Meanwhile, Joe Mixon is on IR. Finally, but that means from now he misses this game and at least 2 more games. Gio Bernard just 9-18 on the ground. He does catch 4 passes for 37 yards through the air. I mean, you've got Ryan Finley as well. I would have asked this regardless, but can fantasy managers feel comfortable starting Gio Bernard, let's say in half PPR leagues or better?
I don't know, man. I mean, what you liked about Bernard is that he was involved in the passing game with Burrow under center. You have no idea what Ryan Finley's going to do, how he's going to check down, how he's going to operate. You don't know. You obviously know that the scoring opportunities for this offense are going to go down. The offensive line is crap.
Yeah.
He's more of like a high-end RB3 while Mixon's out, I think.
Yeah. So if you had to choose rest of season, and again, we don't exactly know when their backups are coming back, would you rather have Duke Johnson or Gio Bernard?
Oof, this is gross.
Yes, because it is the running back position, so it's always gross.
I guess it's Gio because, like, Mixon's not, he can't come back before week 14. Like, he's out till at least then. So I guess it's Gio, but I don't feel great about it.
All right. Meanwhile, for Washington, Antonio Gibson, 16 for 94 and the touchdown on the ground. Terry McLaurin, 7 targets, 5 catches, 84 yards. And we talked about J.D. McKissic. This is just kind of what we want to see here, I guess, tags. I mean, from Washington, any takeaways here? Because it's really just Gibson and McLaurin at this point. Any takeaways there?
Yeah, it's a little frustrating that even Peyton Barber got 8 carries in this game. Because it's almost like Gibson could have like had a monstrous game. There's just been 2 times all season where he's top 13 carries. So it's almost like you have to dial back expectations every single time you want to like raise him higher and higher in your rankings. You have to kind of keep everything in check, especially knowing that schedule that I said coming up, so that J.D. McKissic might see the field a little bit more with negative game scripts. Because again, if you go over their last, you know, 3 or 4 games, they've been a lot of positive game scripts, which is really something that we didn't see early in the season from Washington. But again, with games coming up against Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Seattle in weeks 13 through 15, it's a little worrisome. But Gibson still, I'm going to rank him as, I have him as my number 17 running back for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I have no issue with that whatsoever. Let's go, though, to a game I really want to talk about, which is the Broncos 20 and Dolphins 13. Let's start with the Dolphins. We usually start with the winning team, but I want to talk about the Dolphins because, of course, what happened at quarterback, which was Tua Tagovailoa, was benched, and it was confirmed after the game that he was benched, not injured, which we were wondering about during the broadcast because you saw him get hit hard. You thought maybe his ankle. Tua was not good and hasn't really been all that good. 11 for 20 for 83 yards. He does throw the 1 touchdown to Devontae Parker. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in 12 for 18, 117 yards. He throws the pick at the end of the game to lose it. But the offense looks much better with Ryan Fitzpatrick, in my opinion. They just move the ball well. Now, it's already come out. Brian Flores already come out and said that Tua is going to start next week. I just want your opinion on, you know, this is weird, Tags. We were just talking about with some of the guys here. If you're going to bring in a rookie like Tua, like this, the idea of bench when they're on a 3-game winning streak or whatever it is, the idea of benching him mid-game is very strange to me. Do you think Tua is going to be the starter going forward? Do you think it's going to be Fitzpatrick? And do you think it matters for this offense which one is in there?
Based on what I've seen, I am not surprised that they benched Tua. You know, I know that they were 3-0 with him and all this, and people were throwing out stats that, oh, he's the first rookie quarterback. I don't really care. If you actually watch the games, Tua has been fine. He hasn't been great. He's not the reason they were winning games. The defense has been the reason that they're winning football games. The defense has been playing fantastic. They did again today, but again, the reason they pulled Tua is because he wasn't rewarding his defense for their play. So Fitzpatrick, it sucks. I would love to see Ryan Fitzpatrick continue to play because I think he raises the value of every single person on that team, including the running backs. I just think this is a very boring, unappealing offense for fantasy with Tua under center. I don't even like Devontae Parker. I don't even like him that much with Tua because, again, if they're throwing the ball, I think they averaged 25 pass attempts in his first 3 starts. So even if Devontae Parker is getting like a 25% target share, we're looking at what, 7 targets a game. So it was,
well, I mean, look, they were behind. You saw that they were behind. I get it later in the game when Fitzpatrick was in, but still Parker caught the touchdown with Tua, but he was barely involved. Yep. Really. I mean, he just wasn't getting the targets. He wasn't getting the receptions, and his, you know, he winds up finishing with 9 targets, 6 catches for 61 yards. Yep. With Fitzpatrick. I mean, that's somebody who you're going to start. I rarely feel comfortable. I mean, I think I ranked Parker probably as like a mid-range wide receiver 3. It's just like, that's where, how I feel about him going forward. He'd be much better than that with Fitz in, don't you think?
100%. If Fitz starts, you feel so much better about Parker. If he doesn't, you have to keep expectations at minimal levels.
And again, Flores has already come out and said that Tua is going to start next week against the Jets. Meanwhile, I mean, you talk about the running game. Ahmed, 12 for 43 on the ground. He also catches 5 passes, which is nice, for 31 yards. I think Myles Gaskin, I believe he's eligible to come back next
week.
Flores said earlier this week that there's no timetable for him going forward. So again, is Ahmed just kind of in that big glob of running backs here? Like, I'll start you. I'm not going to feel great about it, but I'm probably just going to keep starting you and throwing you out there every week.
Pretty much. It's kind of like in that Duke Johnson territory where when Myles Gaskin comes back, it's going to be his job. Ahmed had to leave this game for a little bit with an injury. This was not a game I was watching too much of, but
just briefly early on, he was in for most of it, I think.
Gotcha. Like I said, Duke Johnson territory where it's like, you know, a low end RB2, high end RB3 while he's starting. But once Gaskin comes back, he's going to basically be eliminated from the conversation.
I want to see all the championship rosters this year because they're all going to be filled. Like, because unless you rostered the top 10 or 11 running backs, like every running back you roster is like, ugh, all right, ugh, fine, yep, whatever. But they, you know, I mean, you're going to produce 80 total yards. You'll deal with it. The Broncos, meanwhile, Drew Lock does play. Plays okay, doesn't really do anything fantasy-wise, just 270 yards. He does throw the pick. He runs for 23 yards. Really about the rushing game here. Melvin Gordon, 15 for 84 on the ground, plus two touchdowns. He nearly scored another touchdown and fumbled at the goal line. They wound up reversing it. Phillip Lindsay also runs extremely well here, 16 for 82 on the ground, but he doesn't find the end zone. So how do you view, I mean, Melvin Gordon, I was kind of almost leaving for dead at this point from a fantasy standpoint. Does this resurrect his career? Of course, you know who they have next. New Orleans. So it's something where you're not going to want to start him. But this is, how do you feel about both running backs here?
Coming into this game over the last 2 weeks, I don't think either of them had a top 30 finish over the last 2 weeks. So it was like, I don't even know. I said, who's the correct answer of which one to start? Maybe it's neither of them. And right. Miami had been playing well, so it didn't seem like a matchup that you had to attack either of them. I had Gordon ranked higher because he's the one who's involved in the passing game, whereas Phillip Lindsay's lucky to get like two targets. So Gordon was the preferred option. And honestly, they're splitting the work again. It's so difficult to predict this backfield because you go back to last week and Phillip Lindsay, what did he end that game with? Two carries?
Right.
So I'm tired of Pat Shurmur. Tired of him.
All right. So the question remains, though. Let's just say this. Ballpark it for me. They're against New Orleans next week. So a terrible matchup. Where do you expect these guys are going to rank in your running back
range? I would expect Melvin Gordon to be in the 25 to 30 range. And I would expect Phillip Lindsay to be in the, let's say, around RB 35 to 40 range.
All right. Noah Fant, meanwhile, four catches for 55 yards. Now, the big performance here is Tim Patrick, who you know I would love to rib you about. Eight targets, five catches, 119 yards. But he had that giant play at the end of the game that really inflated the numbers when it was just sort of in clock-killing mode. So I'm not going to get there. Are you worried about Jerry Jeudy here? I mean, I know it was, you know, I saw Howard was on him. I didn't watch it that closely, but I saw Howard was on him. I don't know if he was shadowing him the whole game. Yeah, eight targets, three catches, 37 yards. We talk about how we don't like to, you know, tie ourselves to bad offenses, but how do you feel about Jeudy here going forward?
I like Jeudy. It's more about Drew Lock than anything. This matchup, so it was more about, like, so coming into this game, we had to worry about Drew Lock, the injuries he was dealing with coming into this game, also being relatively inefficient throughout the year. And then we also had to worry about the matchup with Xavien Howard. Not that Jeudy can't beat Howard in coverage, because I think he can as a route runner, but it was more of like when you combine everything, it just didn't add up to a big performance for me. I had him ranked, I want to say outside my, it might have been right around wide receiver 40 this week. So I did not have high expectations for Jeudy to get it done. To see eight targets, that's good. I mean, I'm happy to see him see eight targets because ever since he's moved to the perimeter, he's been seeing steady, consistent targets. So in better matchups, I will feel confident playing him as a wide receiver 3. But in matchups like this, doesn't necessarily need to.
Chargers 34, Jets 28. We already talked about how crazy, you know, Herbert, 366 yards. And three touchdowns. He also adds on, as he always does, a little bit extra on the ground, 11 yards. But it's really, I mean, Keenan Allen at 19 targets, 16 catches. I'm sorry I'm laughing. It's just ridiculous numbers. 145 yards and the touchdown. He does lose a fumble. But tags, I mean, how many wide receivers would you take over Keenan Allen rest of the
season? I tried telling you this weeks ago. I was like, because you
did.
You were yelling at me about not having A.J. Brown high enough. And I'm like, I'm not putting him over Keenan Allen. And you're like, and I was like, dude, this guy is getting like, it's almost like getting Deontay Johnson type targets, but averaging a lot more yards per target and scoring more touchdowns. Keenan Allen's been a monster. And I'm happy personally that he did so well in this matchup because you got to take advantage of these matchups when they pop up on the schedule. And I think Justin Herbert is in line for rookie of the year right now with Joe Burrow now out for the season. So Keenan Allen, I have him as wide receiver 7, but depending on Julio Jones's injury, he could move up to 6.
Yep.
And honestly, if you told me that you wanted to take Keenan Allen over any other wide receiver, I'm not even going to argue with you. Like, I won't. Like, Devontae Adams is, like, obviously a stud, so most people are going to say him first. But Hopkins has been a bit yo-yo in his production, up and down.
Yep.
Tyreek Hill, sure. I mean, fine. DK Metcalf, a little bit of a, you know, up and down in his because he's not getting, you know, those buku targets that Keenan Allen is. So, I mean, he belongs every bit in that conversation. He's like a true stud wide receiver 1.
Yeah, I have to apologize to AJ Brown because I kept Brown one spot ahead of Keenan Allen. And even though Brown had that absolutely ridiculous touchdown run that looked like me trying to get to a pie, I have to move Allen ahead of him. Now, I am sorry, AJ Brown. It's not your fault. It's not your fault, AJ Brown. I still love you, man, but I can't ignore what's happening. How about Mike Williams? It's a great matchup, of course, against the Jets. I mean, Mike Williams does produce here, 7 targets, 4 catches, 72 yards, and a touchdown. Just how do you feel generally about Mike Williams? Because he always strikes me as someone who I really, really want to trust, but I can't bring myself yet to trust him unless it's a really good matchup.
You know who Mike Williams is this year? Mike Williams is who everybody thought or wanted Marquise Brown to be. He's a guy that is volatile in his production, but a guy that when he delivers, he delivers. And you kind of live with the ups and downs, and that's where you're at. I mean, even though Keenan Allen's getting targeted, Mike Williams is still having some productive weeks. This was a great matchup. Like, I don't know if there's a better matchup in football for perimeter wide receivers. So Mike Williams, it was a great matchup, but he's a volatile wide receiver 3. You play him if you're looking for upside because the guy has 2 touchdown upside every single week.
Yep. Meanwhile, Kalen Ballage, it leaves very early, very briefly, with an injury that scared everybody. Only 16 for 44 on the ground. We talk about it all the time. Jets are kind of a tough run defense. 9 targets, 7 catches, though. Only 27 yards. So there's talk that Austin Ekeler is going to be back next week. I'm still betting the over. I'm still betting that he's not going to be back for another week. But regardless, once Ekeler comes back, do you think Ballage factors in here at all?
He does. He absolutely does. Because you could look when Ekeler was healthy and in the lineup, like 100% healthy. They were still using Joshua Kelly. They were still using Justin Jackson. This is not a one backfield. So Kalen Ballage is still going to get, I'll say, 10 touches a week when Ekeler comes back. But let's not pretend that that's something that you feel it necessary to play, because a lot of those touches are going to be on the ground, whereas Ekeler is going to steal all that receiving work. So it's more of a handcuff than anything.
Meanwhile, for the Jets, it did look like there was actually going to be some truth to the fact that LaMichael Pirine was going to kind of be the focal point. He scores the early touchdown, but he leaves with an ankle injury. Frank Gore runs pretty well in his stead, 15 for 61, also scores the touchdown. But I want to talk a little bit more about the passing game here. I mean, this is another game, Tags. We talked about how we weren't really all that worried about Jamison Crowder coming off that first game. Only 2 targets, only 3 targets here. 1 catch for 16 yards. Denzel Mims sees 8 targets, catches 3 of them for 71 yards. And Rashad Perriman, only 4 targets, but catches 2 of them, 54 yards and a touchdown. Chris Herndon also catches a touchdown. So are you worried about Crowder, and do you want to roster either Mims or Perriman going forward?
I don't want to roster any Jets if I can help it.
Okay, can we just like now officially avoid every Jet? Is that what we're doing?
Hold on a second. So can you talk me through this? Because Dan, I respect your opinion. You are one of the top, what are you, number 15 overall in the in the rankings. So you were the one that I earlier in the year, I was hesitant to move Jamison Crowder up in my season long rankings. And then you're like, God, this guy is getting 10 targets every, like, play him. Like, you have to play him as a wide receiver. And I finally came around to it. And now it's like the last 2 weeks. This week is the one where he really burned me, because I felt like the matchup was like, it was his. This was a matchup that favored him so well. And to see him walk away with one catch for 16 yards, what do you do with him? Do you drop him?
Yeah, I'm okay to drop him. Yeah, I'm if the question is he plays for the Jets, do I have to hold him? The answer is always no. That's just what it is right now at this point in the season. I mean, you just don't. And Tags, I'm looking at our rest of season rankings. I was actually lower on him at this point than you were. You were 35th, which is about right. I had him 38th. Like, I'd roster Crowder. I roster him in a league. I'm probably going to hold him there because, again, you're in this range where, God, it doesn't really look that good. And who knows what it's going to look like when Darnold does come back. But in the end, yeah, you can drop him if you need to. And I wouldn't feel that bad about it. And yes, I was very high on him coming in to the year and early on. But at this point, yeah, I'm willing to move on if you absolutely have to. Let's go Cowboys 31, Vikings 28. Andy Dalton returns here. The offense looks far more competent. 203 yards, 3 touchdowns. One of them goes to CeeDee Lamb, which, I mean, we could spend, how long do you want to spend talking about that touchdown?
That was nice.
That was gorgeous. Only 6 targets, 4 catches, 34 yards on the touchdown. Dalton Schultz also catches a late touchdown, only 25 yards. And Zeke catches the early touchdown for 11 yards. Meanwhile, Amari Cooper, 7 targets, 6 catches, 81 yards. So let's, I guess, talk about Cooper and Lamb. How do you feel about them with, you know, it's against the Vikings, so great matchup. But how do you feel about both of them going forward? Admittedly, you have always been more bullish on both their rest of season rankings than I have. So I feel like you feel what? That Cooper's a mid-range wide receiver 2 going forward?
I have him at wide receiver 20. I feel good about that. I don't think that he's going to make it into the top 12 or anything like that, but I feel solid about that one. And then CeeDee Lamb, as a guy, as a wide receiver three, I'm good with it. He's seen at least five targets in every single game this year. They clearly want to go to him in the red zone. They believe in him in those contested catch situations. He's better than Amari Cooper in those contested catch situations. So he's the red zone guy. So yeah, I do like those guys going forward. And, you know, Dan, you and I talked about this in the DFS show, that I think Andy Dalton's just been unfairly like thrown into the trash because he had one bad game on primetime TV that led to everybody just like, it's primetime bias. You know, it can go both ways, positive or negative. And in Dalton's case, he had a bad game on primetime and it led everybody to think that, you know, Ben DiNucci was going to be a better quarterback than him. When in reality, we had a big sample size of Andy Dalton producing in a terrible Bengals offense with far less options than he has here with the Cowboys. So I always figured there'd be some sort of bounce back. So it's definitely good to see them get back on track out right out of the bye week.
And so how do you feel about Zeke here? 21 carries, 103 yards. He also catches the receiving touchdown. Tony Pollard, meanwhile, breaks off a long one and he winds up with a rushing touchdown. But how do you feel about Zeke here? Solid RB, like strong RB2 going forward?
I have him at RB11 for the rest of the season. Okay. So like clearly this game did not hurt matters at all. You know, Joe Mixon's injury sending him to IR obviously moved Zeke up a spot for me. James Conner, again, putting up somewhat of another dud. I think I'd rather have Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott looked actually really good in this game. Minnesota's run defense has been one of the bright spots of that team this year. But Zeke did look good. They looked really good, even though he said his hamstring isn't 100% or whatever he said. But yeah, I think low end RB1, he's not the guy you drafted, but still he's in that conversation of RB1.
Yeah, and it's good to see after he was kind of plummeting down rest of season rankings for a couple of weeks, he definitely looked like somebody. And I agree, him versus Connor, I think I probably will move him ahead of Connor. I had him one spot behind, so after this one, I'm pretty sure I will. For the Vikings, it's all good from a fantasy standpoint, maybe not the real life result, which was, in my mind, fairly predictable. Kirk Cousins, 22 of 30, 314 yards and three touchdowns. He does lose a fumble, but of the three touchdowns, two of them go to Adam Thielen. One of them, brilliant, just an absolutely ridiculous catch. 11 targets, 8 catches for 123 yards. Jefferson gets involved late, 5 targets, 3 catches, 86 yards. And of course, Dalvin Cook, 27 carries, 115 yards. With the score, he also loses a fumble and he catches all 5 of his targets for 45 yards. Let's talk about the receivers here, Tags, because I feel like a lot of times the receivers are a little difficult to know what to do with because you feel like half the time they just want to rely on the run game and just go nonstop, in which case the pass attempts are going to be low and they have to be extremely efficient to be effective. So how do you feel about both Thielen and Jefferson going forward?
I mean, it's extremely maddening. We've talked about these guys before. Thielen was a guy that I was like, all right, let's talk about selling high. And there's going to be weeks, and I said this a couple weeks ago, I said there are going to be weeks that you're going to regret selling him because he's going to have a big game. This just happened to be one of those games. Going back to the offense overall, it's kind of like the Browns, right? Where they average fewer than 30 pass attempts per game. They want to run the ball, you know, 35 times per game if they can. And it's leading to very, very inconsistent target totals. Like Justin Jefferson coming into this week, I remember last week I caught so much crap for recommending him as a bad play against the Bears, when in reality, I still kind of stand by the process on that one because when you add in this game, he has now seen 5 or less targets in 5 of his last 7 games. That's not good. Even if you're a crazy efficient, and he is, he's a really good wide receiver. This is nothing against Justin Jefferson. It has everything to do with the lack of like volume. You know, if Julio Jones is getting 5 targets per game, no one's going to want to play him as a wide receiver one. This matchup was just so good that I couldn't pass it up. I had him ranked, I think, as the wide receiver 18 this week, but to see another 5 target game, it's a little disappointing because if he didn't catch that long touchdown towards the end of the game, you're left like, ugh, it doesn't feel
I know. And they've got Carolina, they've got Jacksonville. It's just games that you feel like they're probably, you didn't think about it in this game that they would need to throw a ton anyway, and they didn't throw a crazy amount. But yeah, it is frustrating. I just kind of sit there and accept that I'm willing to rank Jefferson too high rather than be too low. Like I think that's probably a dumb way to do it, but that's how I do it. All right, let's finish up here with our final game, the Colts 34, the Packers 31. So, I mean, we talked about it with Dobbins. Jonathan Taylor, again, the duping, the report. We're going to go to Hines. We're going to go to, you know, Hines is going to be the featured guy here in this one. Jonathan Taylor, 22 carries for 90 yards. He also catches all 4 of his targets for 24 yards. Jordan Wilkins actually has the second best production for the running backs, 4 for 21. Naheem Hines, he does have that touchdown that was called back. 6 carries for 2 yards. He also has 3 catches for 31 yards. So we've talked nonstop about how good this schedule is for running backs for the Colts going forward. Do we think that this is actually Taylor unleashed, and can we rely on him going forward?
No. Honestly, against the Packers, I think they should be a little disappointed with his 4.1 yards per carry. This is a team that's struggled against running backs all year long. Taylor looked fine, but again, he's not breaking those long plays. And when you have a timeshare like this, where any given week he could see, 12 carries, that's problematic because he doesn't have that one play upside that someone like J.K. Dobbins does. I will never, ever, ever be all in on a Colts running back. I'll say it, as long as Frank Reich's the coach, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm hopeful that this is it. But yeah, this is why I was like, people are like, Hines. And I'm so mad at that report. We were talking about it before we got on, that we both were like, I guess we got to move Hines up our rankings because we had them pretty much back to back, but with the report that they would feature him. But yeah, it's impossible to trust. It's gross. But somebody who you can trust is Michael Pittman Jr. Only 3 targets, but catches all of them for 66 yards. And the touchdown. Rivers throws 2 other touchdowns, both to the tight ends, Trey Burton, and 1 to Jack Doyle. So how do you feel about Pittman here going forward? Are you ready to trust him?
Yeah, I mean, he's going back into a matchup with the Titans, who he dominated last time. Here's the unfortunate part, though. Phillip Rivers threw the ball 36 times in this game. Pittman saw 3 targets. That's not enough. Again, this comes back to the idea that, you cannot trust wide receivers that are consistently getting less than 5 targets per game or 6, whatever you want to call it. Pittman did have 15 targets over the last 2 weeks, which is why I kind of wanted to trust him. And he does look good with the ball in his hands. Like, that touchdown was fantastic. But trusting him is a very relative term.
Well, give me the ballpark number for him then. What do you think going forward?
Wide receiver... mid wide receiver 4. I don't want to go higher than that.
Yeah, I probably will go slightly higher than that. I mean, I was already 8 spots higher than you coming in. You were at 57. I was at 49. I had the same issues that you do. But yeah, man, we talked about it. Like, when we're there, sure, I'm glad Jerry Judy's getting more targets, stuff like that. I'm not saying I'll rank Pittman ahead of Judy necessarily, but Judy's getting more targets. But I mean, when Pittman gets the ball in his hand, it was a little bit like how I felt about Claypool. I was just like, hey, that guy's going to get the ball in his hands. Like, at some point, they're going to know. When he gets the ball in his hands, just look out and they'll find a way to do it more. So I trust that with Pittman as well. For the Packers, Rodgers throws for 311 yards, 3 touchdowns. He does throw 1 pick. Davante Adams, of course, 7 catches, 106 yards, and the touchdown. Tonyan gets another one, Jamal Williams. But talk about the running game here. I know it's tough matchup tags because it's the Colts. But Aaron Jones, 10 for 41 on the ground. Now, he does find the end zone, 4 catches for 30 yards. Are you in any way concerned about Jones going forward? I mean, 10, the 10 carries is a little bit, worrisome.
No, I mean, this matchup was brutal. It was always going to be a tough matchup against the Colts. And I was a couple of spots lower than the consensus than Aaron Jones this week because of that. I just feel like the upside was limited. So just be happy you walked away with a touchdown. But again, we talked about this, I think, after last week's game, and Jamal Williams has played good enough to warrant touches in this offense. So it's not going to be, 70-30 Aaron Jones. It's probably going to be more of like a 60-40 timeshare between these two. So they just need Jones to be efficient, and Jones usually is going to be efficient. That's the thing, is like, I've compared him to Alvin Kamara. I do this study every year in the offseason that basically goes through and it looks at where every running back, where their touch took place, where their targets took place, and it says all of these targets and carries have an expected fantasy output, and then it's like comparing that to what the player actually did. Aaron Jones has finished as a number 3 running back in that efficiency metric in each of the last 2 years. Like, he's the only running back that's even close to finishing that high in back-to-back years. So he's always high in efficiency, so he doesn't necessarily need the 20 touches that Jonathan Taylor might, but as long as he's getting 15 plus touches, I'm not worried.
All right, well, that's gonna do it for our Sunday night recap. Week 11. Goodness gracious, flying by. We'll be back, as always, on Monday tomorrow talking about our waiver wire pickups. We will talk to you then.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Explore a wide selection of luxury spirits, wine, and champagne at reservebar.com. Elevate your gifting this year with rare and exceptional bourbons, tequilas, scotch, wine, champagne, with personalized engraving, exceptional glassware, and more. From wines to whiskeys, there's a bottle for everyone. For a limited time, save $20 on your order of $150 plus with the code IHEART at reservebar.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.